And if CEOs and presidents would grab a hold of just that concept of being an intentional, charismatic leader, there is nothing you can't accomplish. There is no obstacle that will stand in your way, because you're feeding your people with hope, and consistently they are trusting you. And when they know that, they don't want to go anywhere else. They're going to work longer for less because they feel like there's something a part of them that's bigger than what they are. And that is so vital. And I don't care if you're in the dirt world, because I've seen it work there. I've seen it work in the non-for-profit space, and I've seen it work in the executive space. If you are there for them in that way, and you're pulling for them and giving your all, there's nothing you can't do.
Welcome to the Environmental Transformation Podcast, where we talk with industry leaders, climate champions, and sustainability professionals who are making an impact in their businesses today. Each leader is solving complex challenges and providing solutions within their respective areas of expertise. And here's our host, Sean Grady.
Hello, ET Nation. It's time to spread the word about this podcast. If you are just tuning in for the first time, well then, welcome to the show. We are honored to have you here with us. Please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review about this episode. If you're a longtime listener, well then, thank you. If you haven't gone to my website lately, please sign up for our newsletter and our blog postings. Please go to my website at www.seankgrady.com and become a member of the ET Nation today. Also, if you are receiving benefit from the content and the work we are doing here on the Environmental Transformation Podcast, please consider giving back and supporting the show. You can go to my website and you'll see a link to buy me a coffee to show your support. Thanks to all who have supported the show. Now let's dive into the episode.
Welcome to the Environmental Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Grady. Today's guest is Michael Bowman. Michael is the CEO of Bowman Legacies, and he basically offers leadership and professional development coaching services for people in the industry. And he's got a good safety background. And the main reason we're bringing him on the show today is that we're going to talk about his new book, Bowman Legacies. Here is written, Lead from the Middle. Michael, this is a fantastic book. And I'm going to, you know, we'll dive into this book a little bit today during the interview. And maybe a lucky listener will get a chance to win a copy. But here you go. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show, bud.
Thank you. It's always a humble honor anytime anybody asks us to be, you know, to talk or to share our opinions about things. And so, yeah, I'm excited.
Absolutely. Well, hey, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, how you got started in the business and, you know, kind of your background so they can kind of put the pieces together a little bit here.
Well, for years I worked in the non-for-profit space and I really focused a lot of my life trying to help people just to get their lives back on track. So I've counseled and mentored 1%er bikers coming out of federal prison and helping them reacclimate to life, anywhere from that to counseling kids and counseling moms and dads and married couples and being more or less in ministry. But I always had a blue collar background. So I was raised blue collar, raised around the mines, raised around construction, civil construction and mining my whole life. And after a while, it just, you know, the not-for-profit space just wasn't paying the bills. And so I knew that I had to do something. So I jumped right in there and went right back to mining. It jumped into the drill and blast space and became a driller, then became a safety guy. Yeah. And while I was there, I realized something. I'm like, you know what? The needs of people are no different here than they are where my old job.
Right.
Like everything I learned how to do applies in some way here, whether in leadership or personal development. And they go hand in hand.
Sure.
Like, I know for a fact this is needed. And I became known as a safety guy who could just get a lot of bogus citations kicked out in conference because they're out there sometimes throw an SNS at you just to see if it'll stick.
Yeah.
I was always big on our citations make us better. You know, we'll own it if it's us, but if it's not, guess what? I'm coming for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I started to share that stuff on LinkedIn and it just kind of exploded. I mean, all of a sudden, I was getting 5,000 views and all these shares, 5,000 shares of posts. And it just, it wasn't something I intended. Right. I just intended to share myself with
others. Being authentic.
Yeah. Just, you know, right. I need this advice. And when I learned it, I thought maybe you could use it too. And so that turned into eventually my wife and I realizing that, hey, I think that there's business in this of actually coaching organizations how to lead on a high level to and how to recruit, how to retain their employees and how to just how to keep them, right. How to retain them, how to keep your employees, how to keep them engaged, how to help with that human element. And it's worked out. And that's pretty much the sole purpose why I wrote this book.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, I was going to ask you, well, what led you to really write the book? And it sounds like it was, you know, a culmination of all your experiences and seeing that people are going through similar challenges. And, you know, you've been brought in, you know, especially, you know, described in the book on several occasions, I'm sure not just this one, but, you know, kind of like, go fix this thing, Michael. I mean, you know, you can, you're the fixer, you know, talk a little bit about how that was, you know, part of your role in your jobs.
That's probably pretty much my favorite part of being in industry was, first of all, the trust in management or an executive staff or a president to say, Michael, I'm sending Michael. Mm-hmm. And that obviously kind of plays to your ego a little bit, but at the same time, there's a great weight of responsibility there.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, yeah, they're putting a lot of trust in you. And I had a great man by the name of Matt Boatman teach me a lot about being a fixer. And he owned a company called General Drilling. He still works there today. His dad started that company. His dad was an absolute unmitigated savage. And they built something pretty special. And while I worked for him, that's something that I did. I traveled a lot and would go to pits and mine sites and fix things and really kind of patch things over. And with my background in understanding the human element and understanding about hearing what people actually not saying when they say things, it was just a perfect marriage. And then when I went on to another organization, it was just the same thing. And I loved going in when everyone else felt like giving up or this all was lost, and then bringing them and walking them through the journey of fixing it. And it was so much, so the answer is always so much simpler than what we ever anticipate. And then giving them the ownership over it and just kind of disappearing. Patting myself on the back and saying, look at the victory I won.
Yeah.
Look what you did.
Yeah. Then, here you go. Okay. I'm on to my next guy.
Yeah. I love that. That was my favorite part of the job. It kept me away from home a lot, which I did not like. But right. And in this particular situation where the book is written about, this was a hard one. This was an ultimate, like I had to throw every skill I had at it to make things move forward in a positive direction.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Well, you know, in the book, you describe an almost impossible scenario, which is the main, you know, point of the book here as far as, you know, reading the story. But, and you were asked to go and fix a project or lose the job. I mean, so high stakes, right? High stakes. And it became clear that, you know, there were leadership issues and employee issues at the site. It wasn't just the leadership, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you think about that challenge, you know, how does the lack of transparency and communication from management affect the morale of employees in that kind of situation?
Well, unfortunately, when things start to go downhill, we have this bad habit of telling everybody that it's going downhill.
Yeah.
And we feel like as leaders, we have to be overly transparent and tell our guys that we suck every single day. And I took the exact opposite approach to that. I'm like, no, we don't suck. We're just messing up. We just need to get back on the path. And right. This is what that looks like. Here's those expectations. I've got your back the whole way, and we're going to make this work. We're going to win. And then having that attitude consistently is the thing. I think that even though we were losing, having a winning attitude is one of the most important things. But I think that a lot of times when we're losing, we have this bad habit of getting in this fight or flight situation where we're just barking orders and there's no real fleshing out or intentionality behind those orders of fleshing out why we're doing the things that we're doing. Mm-hmm. We also don't give the room for people to have that rebuttal because we're in that hurry mode. We're in that push mode.
Do what I say, ask you to do. Come on.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
And we don't give that opportunity for those. So they never feel like a part of the job. And that right. transparency, that intentionality is so vital, because if you're in the clutch and you're wanting these guys to link shields with you and really get your back, you got to treat them like human beings, and you got to treat them like team members and brothers, and not just this commodity that you compute success by. They're the human element. And if you don't know how to handle that, you're a manager, and you will never progress to be a leader. A leader inspires. A leader explains. A leader fleshes things out. Obviously, you know, if it's 100-1 and we're in a battle, I'm not going to tell you it's 101. I'm not going to be terribly transparent because the odds are against us, right? But not everything is an emergency, and not everything is 911. And what we've really got to strive to do is put things in context when we're in emergency or when things aren't going well and we're losing. We got to put it in context. If the zombie apocalypse hit, the first thing that you're going to want to do is get home to your family.
Right. Right. Yeah.
This job is not something you're going to be thinking about. So let's put it in context, and then let's move forward together. It needs to be happening from the top to the bottom.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, we got a lot of leaders that get put into fight or flight by executives that are giving these false objectives that really don't work.
Yeah. Or they don't really understand how the business is, you know, being managed or working in, you know, at the lower level. They're just like making decisions and now do something. And it's like, I mean, I think one question that, you know, it's come up when I read the book too, and it's like, what are some of the challenges leaders are faced when trying to create that team culture? You know, they want to do the right thing. They want to create that culture, but there's some problems or obstacles in their way. I mean, or maybe there's not, and they just want to do it. What's the best way to do it?
That's what I call a Pandora box question. Right?
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, it's great. I love it. It's a Pandora box question because there is an infinite amount of scenarios that you can put out there.
Right.
If I was to demystify all that and simplify it, to me, it's all about personalities.
Right.
Every person you have on that site has different objectives, or that job site or that executive team. They all have different objectives. They all have different wants and needs, and they all have different ways of learning and understanding the job that you do. Your job as a leader is to sort all those attitudes out. And the biggest, most important thing to building that team is building trust.
Yeah.
Build trust. Build trust, because if they don't trust you, you're going to constantly have these issues. If they know they can't come to you, or if they know you're going to make decisions that are way beyond what you should be doing, if they know you're micromanaging or overreaching, you're never, ever, 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 ever going to gain their trust.
Mm-hmm.
Trust takes consistency. And some people, you walk in the door, they trust you. They're your best friend. Yeah. They're like the golden retriever character. And others, it might take 2 years, and you got to ask yourself as a leader, are you willing to invest those 2 years, or are you just looking for robots that you're going to cut this guy, trim him, and get him out of there because you're hiring fast, firing fast, which is an echo chamber of hopelessness.
Yeah. No kidding, right? Absolutely.
And we'll be right back after this brief message from our sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by TerraTherm. TerraTherm is a worldwide leader in the development and implementation of thermal remediation services for organic contaminants. They partner with environmental consultants, engineering firms, government agencies, corporations, and property owners to achieve their remediation cleanup goals. Their experienced project teams and patented technologies are based on over 20 years of successful project experience and R&D in the thermal remediation of soil, rock, and groundwater. If you are evaluating in situ remedial alternatives for organic contaminants, then it's time to think thermal. To learn more, check out their website at www.terratherm.com.
You know, when you get pulled into a situation and you're jumping into that problem solving mode, what should one do to kind of assess the situation, you know, before they, you know, get going and you know, what should they do?
For me, as a young leader, I was that go-getter, jump in there, do this, do that, get it done. Just trust me, we'll get it done. And it worked sometimes. but it didn't always work. And I didn't always have a lot of fans, right? You know, and we're not looking for friends always. You can't always be everybody's friend as a leader. I understand all that. But for me, it was pretty harsh. And I would just look back and at the wake of my leadership style. And though I got the job done, it was a lot of heavy lifting for me.
Yeah.
And so having that attitude just to step back and not let your ego lead, especially if you've been in industry for a long time. And I caution a lot of leaders, presidents, CEOs, people who really know your industry, you know your industry inside and out. Right. The habit is to be able to look at the whole situation and go, I know what's wrong.
Yeah.
And this is how to fix it. And that could very well be true. But what you need in this point is real collection of data. And you need to play two parts with this. To find problems, you got to play the part of Spock, and you got to play the part of Sherlock Holmes. Spock, because even if you have a buddy that's there, you can't have that information bias. You've got to make sure that even your buddy is doing his or her role. Even your friend, even your companion, you got to make sure they're actually not part of the problem.
Right.
And you can't have a lot of emotion in this situation.
That's
and Sherlock Holmes, because you need data, you need logic, you need truth. And so even though you can see what's wrong, okay, that's good, right?
Yeah.
That gives you a base. Yeah. But really, you need to start to take that time to talk with people, get in the dirt with them, no matter if it's an executive team or actually in the dirt world, and take that time to listen, truly listen, and get those trends and commonalities to what everybody's saying. And this is going to get you to the true heart of the actual issue.
I like that point in the book where, you know, you didn't just go in and start trying to problem solve the situation, which, you know, you could quickly tell there was leadership issues right away. But then you started to dig in as you like went boots on the ground and riding on the dozers and, you know, taking the trash out with the guys and going to dinner with them and getting the real lowdown. And that that provided you a better context of what the real issues were.
Right.
In addition to what you kind of originally saw going in. So, you know, I think that was really great to bring that up, because I think we're a lot of us, and I'm guilty of it. I know I've been guilty of it, where you just like, oh, I know that this is the problem. And, you know, well, maybe that's part of it, but it's not the whole thing. Right. You know,
not the whole thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. That was really good. Well, you know, okay. So if you're not the boss and you're not the supervisor, how does one lead from the middle?
Your consistent winning attitude is everything. I don't care if you're leaning on a shovel. I don't care if you're a janitor. I've done both, by the way. I did both of those roles. I know what it's like to look in a stall and some kids puked in it and I had to clean it up. So I've been there. that attitude that's consistent. And every time people have those water cooler conversations and all they want to do is complain, strive to stay above that. Strive to be the voice of reason that says, hey, look, guys, I know I'm not happy with the supervisor either, but complaining about it isn't going to help anything, because we're just taking it off our shoulders and putting it on someone else's chest.
Yeah.
Look, I want you all to listen to that. That's important. And this is for life too. You're taking it off your shoulders and putting it on someone else's chest. And now they got to carry that problem and it's unresolved. If you want to be an absolute unmitigated savage, somebody that is a problem-solving machine, And I'm getting a little ahead of my, because this is my next book that's coming out, but you have got to first and foremost nip the complaining and look for true answers. And I don't care if that's entry level or if you're at the top. And if you're entry level, stop obsessing about things you can't change. What you've got to decide is this a deal breaker for me? This situation, I'm entry level. I'm going to keep a positive attitude because my integrity says I'd come here and I agreed to do the job. Can I handle this? Is this a deal breaker for me? And do I need to look elsewhere? And that's why I think a lot of questions that people don't ask, they just keep getting into this, mouse cage mentality of constantly complaining about the same issues, feeling hopeless about leaving instead of being strategic about networking and getting out of that situation.
Yeah. And I also thought when you kind of described that leading from the middle, it's, you know, another kind of concept was, you know, do the best job you can.
Yeah.
Whatever task you've been given to do, right? Don't be a crummy performer, you know, or doing it, you know, half-assed basically, right? I mean, let's not do that. Let's just do our best and then take the initiative. Like if you see something, do something, right? I mean, I think that was kind of the, you don't need to be the actual designated leader, just be a leader in what you're doing so people will recognize that your quality of delivering your, you know, your work, people say that is leading. That is a leader, that, you know, right?
It is. I'll never forget. I've always been the take the trash out guy. I've just always done it. It was something that my father said when I was a kid. He said, Michael, if your boss ever finds you not busy, be sweeping the floor, be taking out the trash. So ever since I was a little kid, you know, first getting my jobs when I was, you know, 13, 14 and 15 and working, he was like, always be busy. And so I'm in an executive office. The president's there. The CEO is there. Our investor is there. It's a beautiful office. It's clean. It's fancy. It's the nicest thing I had worked up to date. I was so proud of being there. And the trash was full. And I remember just pulling the trash. Yeah. Housekeeping wasn't coming for like two more days. It was a big trash can. So I was like, dude, this is no bueno. We got a lot of guys coming in and out of here. It's going to be a mess. It's going to overflow. Yeah. These are young guys. They don't think about this stuff. So I took out the trash. And I'll never forget one of the guys that was very integral to getting this business off the ground looked at me and he said, why didn't I do that? He said, the need was there. He said, obviously, I can't do it all the time. It's not my job.
Yeah. But
why didn't I do that? And then he started watching and I would end up going to look at the trap and he had already taken it out.
You're trying to beat you to the punch.
Right. And then all the time you'd go into the men's room and there was no toilet paper. Guys are notorious for this. Guys, yeah. You got to stop this. Look before you leave, though. I'm telling you, I've learned this from experience too. So yeah, I would go in there and I would fill the toilet rings. And I remember one day a young man came in there. He's 26, 27 years old engineer. And he was like, why are you doing that? And I said, because the need's there. And I knew if I fulfilled that need for you, you might do it for me. And then all of a sudden I watch and here comes Hayden putting in toilet rolls, you know, and making sure that we're all looking out for each other in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
That's the integral part of leading from the middle is that guys, even though you feel alone a lot of the times because you're doing the next right thing, I'm telling you what, it's infectious because the right people see those efforts and going,
yeah, hey.
Why did I do that?
Yeah, why did I do that? And, you know, I'm gonna jump in and you know lift it up too, you know, and you know share the load, right? I thought that was really great, and I mean it's really the whole concept of the book. So I, you know, this is really important message for people listening. You know, take this to heart. You know, in the book, you talk about things that you should not do when trying to turn things around. You know, can you elaborate a bit on that? Like, you know, there were 8 insightful attributes you listed for a leader of things that, you know, were pretty powerful. So things to live by. Talk about that.
Well, number one is I'll just share this one and I'm going to belabor on it because I think it's so important. When I do this talk in different places and we're going to be in the National Demolition Association keynote speaker this year in March in San Antonio. I'm going to be doing Leading from the Middle there. We're really excited about that. We have a Leading from the Middle conference that we do that's actually 3 powerful PowerPoints, of which one is Leading from the Middle. And then we have what we call the Problem Protocol and then Linking Shields after that with another organization. And the number one thing that I share is don't yell, right? Yeah. And that seems so trite. A lot of people are like, well, of course, well, that's dumb. You know, obviously, don't yell. No, this is what I mean by don't yell. What I mean by don't yell is when your team is losing and they already know it, they don't need to hear it. They already know they're losing. And what we do as leaders so often is we badger our people and we remind them every day about how they're losing instead of giving them the tools and the encouragement to win.
Gaslighting. Don't.
And it just drags morale and culture down to the point where it just gets hopeless and it's just another job.
Yeah.
I did something one time that it taught me this lesson. And we were in a non-for-profit situation and I had 200 people at a camp. It was like a kids camp. So adults ranging from adult camp counselors to teens to little kids around 8. Mm-hmm. And we needed a tug of war. We needed a rope so long that everybody get on this tug of war rope. And I thought, maybe this is a bad idea. And so I had this friend of mine, Andy got us this brand new huge rope and we did it. And 5 times one team won. And I mean, it got a muddy mess. And I'm thinking, we're sending these people home, and it looks like we've just drugged them through a hog lot. And, you know, the hair stuffed, or the grass stuffed everywhere, you know. And the losing team was just battered. And they lost 5 times in a row. And finally, I was like, all right, we're going to do it one more time. The losing team was like, oh. And when I said go, now I wasn't playing tug of war. I was a referee.
Right.
When I said go, Sean, I ran as fast as I could to the losing team side. And I grabbed that rope and I pulled my guts out with everything I had. I was screaming. I was, whoa, and I was pulling. And the violent reaction was unbelievable. The opposite team literally left the ground. And the reaction was so fast that we pulled them off of their feet. And when they hit, we pulled them like 6 feet. And it was so fast and violent that their minds didn't think, all I got to do is let go of this rope.
Right, right.
And these people, I mean, 100 people at once, they didn't let go. We rug them through the mud. Well, of course, the winning team that had been winning for 5 times, like, that's a fluke. So we did it 5 more times, and every time we won. But I'm going to tell you, I only pulled hard once. The rest, I just acted it out. That losing team needed to know was I had their freaking backs. I believed in them, and I was willing to give every single ounce of everything that I had in that moment for them, win or lose. And courage and hope built up in them in such a way that the reaction was violent. And if CEOs and presidents would grab a hold of just that concept of being an intentional, charismatic leader, there is nothing you can't accomplish. There is no obstacle that will stand in your way, because you're feeding your people with hope, and consistently they are trusting you. And when they know that, they don't want to go anywhere else. They're going to work longer for less because they feel like there's something a part of them that's bigger than what they are. And that is so vital. And I don't care if you're in the dirt world, because I've seen it work there. I've seen it work in the non-for-profit space, and I've seen it work in the executive space. If you are there for them in that way, and you're pulling for them and giving your all, there's nothing you can't do.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I mean, just in my own personal life, if you've got a supervisor or a boss that's like, I got your back, Sean, I got your back, you work harder.
Oh yeah.
You want to go the extra mile.
Yeah.
You know, if you got supervisors that, you know, don't do that, you kind of like, well, you know,
yeah,
I'll do my job, but I'm not really that invested as I used to be, you know, because you don't have the support, and it has a toll on, it's a mental of toll. Like you said, like, I didn't pull hard. It's just mentally, they thought I was working harder and my voice was there, and they knew I was helping, but that's the thing. And you got to be there.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Environmental Transformation Podcast. We'll be right back after this message. Did you know E-Tank is the only environmental rental equipment company in the industry that offers a 100% certified clean guarantee at no additional cost? Well, this gives customers the peace of mind knowing that container contents from the previous renter isn't going to cross-contaminate the contents of the current customer and potentially cause liability concerns. You know, E-Tank also provides a one-of-a-kind complete maintenance program for all its rental items, including liquid-tight roll-off containers, fluid transfer pumps, and filtration system components. To learn more about the types of containers and pumps E-Tank supplies, check out their website at www.etank.net. So the next time you are faced with an environmentally challenging project, give E-Tank a call to help solve your problem. It's just that easy.
You've got to be there, and you got to think about something too. I mean, history points this out. There's a man named King Leonidas. And I'm not saying this because of the movie 300. I knew this before the movie 300 because this stuff geeks me out. Mm-hmm. And they didn't just have 300 people. They were dwindled down to 300 people. And in a place called Thermopylae, they were dwindled down to a small force and kept a possibly, you know, million man army at bay for a long time. Enough so that they weren't conquered. Now, they themselves were beaten back and they themselves were killed and gave the ultimate sacrifice. But because those people knew, because they had proper training, they had proper supervision, they had accountability, and they had a leader that would not quit and gave his dying breath for them, I'm going to tell you, history still talks about them today.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so if you've got this, you know, leadership behind you, or leadership there helping, you know, where they've got your back, man, you're going to change everything, like you said. And especially if they're a little bit of charismatic, you know, I mean, there are leaders who aren't very charismatic, and right. That's okay.
Right.
They're very calculating. They're, you know, insightful. They're thoughtful. They think, you know, but they're just not like, I got your back, Michael. Come on, let's do it. You know, they're not that rah, rah guy. Okay. That's fine too, but you still know. Yeah.
If you know the support and you're able to, and you're intelligent, you're articulate, and you're able to move that business forward because of that's your gift, get a rah-rah guy.
Yeah, yeah, right. Get
a guy you can link shields with and trust, pour into him what you need. He can pour into you, and maybe you can, you know, get a little bit outside your comfort zone a little bit there. But you don't have to be the ultimate leader.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's kind of a misconception too, right? I mean, most leaders, they're good at a very few things. They don't have all the skill sets. None of us do, right? I mean, we're all gifted in certain ways, you know, and so it's important to understand that. But, you know, one of the skills a leader exhibits is the ability to recognize and utilize talent.
Yeah.
You know, you describe that in the book, and, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. What do you mean, and how does this help leaders develop the next generation of leaders?
Utilizing talent is one of the greatest skills you can have as a leader. And I'm going to compute this in a bit of a story form, because I think for a lot of us, we're visionary thinkers. You know, we got to have that vision. My sister worked in the racetracks for the horses, the thoroughbreds in Kentucky for many years. And she's still down there doing all kinds of cool stuff. And what I learned was from this, and I never knew this, that some horses were really strong in that first quarter mile and they could keep a decent speed. And so their get up and go right away was the thing that kept them ahead. And so the jockey knew that. He played to the strengths of that animal. Now, some said, okay, hey, no, he's not real good off the gate. I've got to slow down. But in that back stretch, we're going to go as hard as we can, because that's where he's strong in that final push.
Right.
Every one of the people within your realm of influence has strengths. They have power. Some people are those problem solvers. Some people have their all heart. Some people are the people that you need to send in when others are broken. Some people are analytical. They're very analytical. They're very facts orientated. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that you need to go, what's the problem here? Figure it out for me. Because they don't have a dog in a fight when they approach things. Now, every one of those attributes can be considered negative too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But when you realize those strengths and don't expect everybody just be this perfect robot, and that's how we recruit right now. Executive teams, especially we see this pandemic in the dirt world, is they're always expecting the perfect foreman to arrive. When they
yeah.
The perfect superintendent, the perfect yeah. sales guy,
right.
The perfect HR person, right? There's no responsibility on your side of building, actually taking the time to build those people up.
Yeah, they just want them to show up and put them in the seats. Like, yeah, they're already made for me.
Yep, and you got a good 6 months to prove yourself, maybe. And then all of a sudden you're like, can I talk to you in the back office for just a second?
Yeah.
Okay. That's inevitable. I'm going home. I hope I get a severance package. Yes. It's over.
Yeah. I mean,
an employee one time. I had mentored him. He was our safety director. And I said, well, today's my last day. And he said, no, I can't do this without you. He said, we need you so bad. I'm like, no, I know that tone. I know people. It's my last day. I shook his hand, said, I love you, buddy. And sure enough, they let me go that day. Me and five other people. And so I know what that's like. But look, you can't expect people to just arrive and be perfect. You've got to give them clear and attentive. Even goes back to that transparency. We're not even transparent about job behavior because we become cowardly leaders.
Yeah. Well, you know, we
give these slight unintentional suggestions, and if they don't get it, we fire them. And we don't care about the family. We don't care about the move. I watched a young man come and move across the country from Oregon to Bloomington to work for an organization. There was no intentional leadership. They didn't give him the tools to win. And because he wasn't you know, just killing it right up boots off the ground or right off the ground. Guess what? He, his wife and his new baby needed to find a place to live.
Mm. You know, what do you think or how do you think our current culture is really affecting the leaders and how they respond to things? I mean, you know, it feels like, you know, society is really changing the way, it expects people to, you know, recognize other people and things like that. I got a feeling, you know, there's, you know, all these different movements going on. And I feel like that's a big challenge for leaders these days to, you know, kind of maneuver through that or navigate the right way to communicate to different groups.
So we have a Half Price Books here in Bloomington, and my wife was there and she found a book from 1933. On how to manage and lead people. It's a tiny little book. It's about that thick, about that tall. And I read it cover to cover. And every problem we're having now.
It was already talked about back then, huh?
It was talked about 1930. Well,
it's human nature, right? I mean, like if I go back to biblical times, I'll start reading the Bible and I'm like, oh my gosh, the human condition's been so played out.
We're a mess. Right. But the thing that reigns true consistently is good leadership,
right?
You know, John Maxwell, 360 leader.
Oh yeah, love that.
Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, anything that they fart out on the world, you know, if it's it doesn't matter. It's beautiful. You know, extreme ownership, outstanding. Dichotomy of leadership, outstanding. Echelon front. I know I'm a business consultant. I shouldn't be promoting their services, but oh my God, what they're doing is amazing. And so, solid leadership principles are eternal.
Right.
You know, you can be a football player and you only got so long till you're on the front line, especially if you're a linebacker or you're a quarterback, because you get hit a lot. You know, if you're on the front line, you're a big dude, man, your body can only handle so much. And if you're smart, you're going to get out of the game at the right time. A dancer, for instance, can only do the athletic things and the big leaps, you know, for so long until your joints and your tendons start to fail you. But leadership is something that you can do from your earliest age.
Till you die.
Your last breath.
Yeah.
And understanding along the way that you're not going to be perfect. This thing right here has exemplified. This thing right here and its stupid apps that we're on has exemplified the selfie. We have terms called catfishing. I'll never forget working with younger people and they're like, oh, that guy got catfished. And I was like, what? What does that even mean? And then I was like, oh my God, there's a term for that. We have learned how to perfect even a photograph to make us look the best we possibly can.
Yeah.
And so that ideology that you have to be perfect, that's not going to happen, guys. And you got to stop beating yourself up about your failures. You got to stop beating yourself up about your shortfalls. You got to stop beating yourself up about where your business isn't, where you are personally not. You just got to work with what you've got and keep getting back on the path. That's all it is. Jocko says it. Get back on the, once you realize you're off the path, whether that's a workout, whether that's good management and leadership, get back on the path. Once you've yelled at somebody and you know you did it wrong, go make it right. Get back on the path.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's true. And you got to do that. And, you know, I think that being calm and I've got little stickers on my picture for my monitor says, calm down, lower your voice. reminders for me, because I don't think I'm yelling, but the way I communicate may come across as you're yelling, even though it's not like I'm yelling, you know, the way it's being communicated sounds like it's a yell. Right. I mean, so
when I was young, I got a nickname Flip. My nickname was Flip at work because I'd flip out. And I remember we had this guy we called Rhino because he was as big as a rhino. I mean, he's terrifying. This guy, he's the guy you don't want to see in a dark alley.
Don't make him mad.
Yeah, one day I flipped out about something and Rhino looks at me. And this guy was scary. And he looks at me and he goes, you terrify me. What? He goes, I'm scared to death of you, Mike. He goes, you flip out. I'm going to start calling you. And so that's where my nickname got Flipped. I mean, he's scared. This guy's scared of little old me. And I realized something had to change there. But I think also on that side of things too, one of the things that Xers got to learn was, because we got yelled at a lot.
Yeah, we did.
We expected it and it made us tough. and it made a thick rind. And it, I'm telling you, it takes a real, pardon my French, it takes a real good ass chewing to really get me riled up. And so for us, as for the workers or for someone who's being led, give people grace. They're going to fail.
Right.
Don't expect your leaders to be perfect. Don't expect the CEO, the president of your organization. Stop complaining about them. Stop complaining about your wife, your husband. If you're sitting there putting that mantle of you've got to be perfection, it's never going to work. And you're giving expectations that are always going to disappoint you. So there's got to be that level of grace there too. It's a two-way street. Yes, leaders need to lead on a higher level. Yes, leaders need to get back on the path. But those that are us that are aspiring leaders, we've got to realize that, you know what? They're not there yet. And they're never going to be, because this is a constant and continual organic and intentional process.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the ways I think that leaders can really transform teams or businesses, you know, and maybe you can talk about this, is including them in the decision-making process. You know, let's dive in on that, double click on that a bit. And let's talk about, you know, the importance of that and getting the buy-in from people.
I just actually talked to a client right before I got off the phone with you about this very thing. He's wanting to make a change within the organization, and it's a good change. And I told him, it's like, well, we need to slow down, because this is how most businesses do it. We're going to say, well, this is the decision we've made. Now you all need to get down with it, because it's the best thing for the organization. And it very well may be. But I said, let's slow down and let's take some of those entry-level people or some of your foreman and your superintendent. Let's bring them into the process of this decision-making. Because here, twofold, if it loses, we're all in this together. If it fails, we all own it because we made the decision corporately. Now, if it wins, this is what's awesome. Your people take credit for that win. It feels good. It feels good. Yeah. Now they feel like they've got forward movement. And the human being intrinsically is made for forward movement. If not, we would still be living in caves and clubbing each other, right? We would be worried about the saber-toothed tiger this morning. And that's not an issue, right? We have high-rise buildings and things that fly in the air, you know? The F-16, I heard a pilot say, it's like strapping a rocket to the end of a pencil and going for it. So we go to space, for heaven's sakes. Okay. Yeah, right. So we need forward movement. So do your people. And this is so valid of a lesson. I'm telling you, you want to fill your people with fire, fix something and give them credit for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fix something as a team and brag on how the team did it and annex yourself. I call this verbal counter-striking. Annex yourself from the conversation. Look what the guys did.
Yeah.
Look what the team did. Look what the sales team was able to pull off this month. Mm-hmm. Now you had your part in it, sure. But why do you need the credit?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the one recent takeaway that, you know, the book gave me too, that I've been focusing on and seeing how I communicate. You know, it's not, hey, I did this, or we did this, or it's, hey, it's a team effort. And I think that the more you communicate, hey, thanks for joining the team. Thanks for, you know, contributing to this process as a group. You know, it's not just, yeah, I might be driving part of it, but, you know, it's the team that's contributing. They're invested in it. They're helping in the decision process. So that
changing. For those trying to get up in the career, you're trying to move forward in your career. This is what I learned. I've watched those other guys, me, look what I did, look what I did, look what I did, and scratch and claw and try to step on other people along the way, and everyone hated them along the way.
Yes.
The more that I got obsessed about making other people win, it was obvious that to other people that I made that move. And I went from a space of coming out of my career of dreams, the non-for-profit space, helping people get their lives better, to entry-level blue collar, to the executive world, to becoming known around the world, and then starting my own business. Okay. That all happened with just one concept: giving of myself and serving others.
Yeah.
Just that concept. If you can get that down and stop worrying about who takes credit, the right people are going to see you. And that's if you don't, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the doors will open up in other locations. I mean, the door you might be in might close on you, but they're just preparing for the new door. Right. Yeah. Right. You're just getting prepared for the new door.
ET Nation, thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back after this message. If you're listening to this podcast, I'll bet you may be thinking, how can I level up and advance my career? If you want to get that promotion, increase your regulatory knowledge, gain professional recognition, and earn more money, then it's time to obtain an industry credential from the Institute of Hazardous Material Management. The IHMM offers 8 credentials that are ANSI approved for students, experienced, skilled employees without a degree, and for the degreed professional looking to set themselves apart from the pack. Their credentials focus on 3 main areas: Certified Hazardous Material Manager, the CHMM, the Certified Dangerous Goods Professional, the CDGP, and the Certified Safety and Health Manager, the CSHM. If you become an IHMM credentialed professional, then you will be in the top 1% of your profession and your credential will have a global reach. Check out their programs they offer at www.ihmm.org. That's www.ihmm.org. What are you waiting for? Get started today.
You know, I think another kind of concept you talked about is, can you describe what you mean by being a humble and hungry leader?
A humble and hungry leader. Humble means, again, you're not taking credit for those things. You're not haughty. Oh, yeah, wait till I get there. Watch what I'm going to do. Okay, mm-hmm. This isn't the UFC. That's important. Important element in the fight game. Mm-hmm. That's important element in football. You know, to look at your opponent and go on, I'm coming to get you, you know?
I mean, yeah, I think in certain environments, that's kind of like in football, you kind of need that kind of edge. You need that edge, but
it's no fun to watch when it's not everybody shaking hands and hugging, you know, it's like, okay, I appreciate the sportsmanship, but every once in a while, I like a good row to get, you know what I mean? And so, you know, take that drama aside and really understand that it's important to keep it classy and it's important to understand that your efforts matter every day. The words matter that come out of your mouth every day and they make a difference.
You know, when I read the book, I was kind of in a spot in my life, just, you know, and this was recent, you know, I'm like, man, I'm just not feeling great about things, you know, and realizing, you know, being a leader, whether, you know, depending on whether, what level that is, you know, leadership is hard.
It is. Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, and that's one of the posts that I sent out on LinkedIn after I read your book is leadership is hard.
Yeah.
And it is. And, you know, if you don't have good resources and tools to help you navigate the process, to keep the level head, to be humble, to, you know, have some resources that you gotta, you know, I got a blueprint, guys, right here is the blueprint. You need to get this book. This is an amazing book that Michael has written and it's full of practical applications. That's the way you wrote it was really impressive because you really kind of like you set the scene. Yeah. Hey, I'm here. This is the scenario and I'm going to show you everything I went through to kind of, you know, and then, oh, by the way, these are the leadership tools and the things you should do, shouldn't do that you need to think about if you're going to be successful at trying to solve problems and be a leader, you know, and then lead from the middle. Like you don't need to be the CEO. You don't need to be the super. You just need to be the guy who can come in and change the culture a bit. I mean, the way you describe fixing and changing the mindsets of just the everyday worker.
Yeah.
Because they had their own factions going on. They were doing their own stuff that were, you know, undermining the whole process. Right.
Right. I think what's important to understand that as a blue collar guy myself, you know, and having had been in every aspect of that world, I have to say that keeping it simple is the most important thing in the whole wide world. So I wrote the book with the intention of, I don't want this to be heady. I'm not going to add extra chapters just so the book can look bigger. And I want a 8-year-old kid, even though it's pretty, some serious issues going on in this. And there's some, I think there's an F-bomb in there a time or two, but understanding that they could read it and understand it and conceptualize it, but then a CEO or president can take it and look at it and be challenged. And that's what I tried to do with that, because I've read so many books and the end of it, you're like, I didn't learn anything.
You know? Like, where's my application?
Where's the practical application? You told me a story, you brought me to a place, you showed me all the problems, but you didn't give me the answers.
Yeah.
And I had a mentor in my life that eternally changed my life. His name is Perry. And Perry told me one time when I had given a message, he said, man, that was charismatic. Man, people loved it. And man, you told them everything that was wrong, but you never gave them the answers. And every one of them is going to walk away feeling bad about themselves because they don't know how to fix this problem you just presented to them.
You're like,
He said, that's like a doctor coming in going, yeah, you're sick. And I think you're kind of screwed. See you later.
Here's your bill.
Here's your bill, by the way, because I'm going to go play golf and that Mercedes is not paying for itself.
That's right.
And so, or my loan, my college loan.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, so it's important for us to understand that when we are leading anything, man, make it palatable to people. And that's what I strove to do with this book. I give you the rules of what to do, what not to do. And for those of you that are lost today on that, you don't know where to start. My book's a good place. You know, obviously that's why we're here. But at the same time, I'm going to tell you this. My little girl hopped up in my lap one time. And she's 19 now, but when she was itty bitty, she said, Papa, how do you know how to be a good papa? And my whole life flashed before my eyes, and I didn't have a good answer for her because as a child, I'd been abused. I'd been sexually abused, verbally abused. I had been manipulated as a child. I had been, I didn't have that rose colored glasses, Ward Cleaver growing up. And I said, you know what, honey? I don't know how I know how to be a good papa. All I do know is what not to do. And I'm going to tell you, young leaders out there, you know what not to do. Remember those hard lessons that hurt you. Remember those times where those insults or those things that they sent you in without any help, or there was a safety issue, or maybe on that executive team, they're asking big things of you and giving you nothing, no tools, no ability to accomplish this big BHAG. We use all these stupid terms and they're meaningless. If we're not there to help, remember those lessons, because the lessons that hurt the most don't have to continue to hurt you. You can use them, weaponize them like a two-edged sword, and use those to fuel you to fix problems.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like you mentioned, the book's a great place to start. And any leader who's aspiring to be a leader or maybe finds themselves in that role, you know, it's pretty wise counsel to try to learn some things that other leaders have, learned and are training and trying to communicate to others, because, you know, it's all about experiences, right? You know, you don't become a good carpenter overnight.
Oh, no.
Right? It takes practice. Yeah.
Right. It takes practice. Absolutely. And it takes you giving yourself some grace when you fall short. And
keep absolutely. Moving. Absolutely.
But well, forward in your life that you've got this mission and that mission matters and you matter. And before we wrap anything else up, and this is what the book's really ultimately all about. There's a lot of people in this world that don't feel like that they matter. A lot of people in this world that feel like the world would be better off without them. And I'm going to tell you, that's not true. And if that thought came through your mind this week, listener, I'm going to tell you, if you need to know that you're loved, I'm going to tell you right now, I say this all the time, I love you. Because the good Lord loves me. And if you can love this guy, I can love you right where you're
at. Amen. Amen, brother.
I don't need to know you. Here's the thing. You'll get through this on the other side. If you'll see this problem that you're going through right now is not so definite that you're actually going to get through it. When you consider it that way, you're going to use this to better yourself and others. And that's building a legacy that will far surpass your legend. And that's inspiring others to do the same. And that's how we change this world. And that's how we change the industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Michael, this has been a great conversation. Tell the listeners a little bit about the services you offer and how they get a hold of you and get a hold of that book.
So for businesses, man, I'm the fixer. I'm still am. You know, a lot of businesses reach out to me to help build their leaders, their existing leaders, help build plans to build their leaders and systems that build their leaders in all aspects, whether that's safety, the executive team, it doesn't matter. I have clients that are on every end of the spectrum, superintendents, foremen, and I've got guys who are presidents of organizations and business owners. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, it's the personal development. I've had a lot of divorced presidents call me. A lot of guys who are very successful in business and had a hard time, and I help them get through it. There's a lot of tragedy in this world, and you as an exec have a hard time getting through that. I'm your guy. I'm going to link shields with you, And while I'm putting my shield over you, nothing's going to harm you during this time. And I'm going to help you get through it. And the other thing that we do is the speaking events. We love doing that because, man, that's a mass effect, right? And if you're looking for something that's impactful and extremely powerful, where grown men are probably going to cry, I'm your guy.
That's good. That's good. Well, you know, look, I think that this has been a great discussion. So for people who are looking to get a hold of the book, again, you can get it on Amazon, right?
Yes.
And so that's a great resource. That's where I got it. Good, you know, and it is a quick
review. Please leave a review.
And it's a quick read too, guys. It's not that bad. I mean, it's you know, I got it done in a weekend and had a great time diving into it and learned a bunch. And you know, I have it as like almost my desk reference almost right here. I'm just kind of referring to it a bit, you know? I mean, what do you think about that, Michael? Right?
What am I supposed to say to that?
Hey man, you're doing great things, buddy. You're doing great things. Keep up the great work. We'll put a link to this information on the podcast, on the website. We'll promote it and get it out there. And you know, we could give a book away to one of the lucky listeners if that makes sense to you. But you know, just somebody that responds to.
I'll let you pick them and then
we'll just send a book. That sounds great. Well, we'll do that and I'll put a little promo out there for the listeners and we'll do that. I think they'll really enjoy it.
Outstanding. I'll sign it and
even better.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, hey, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. All right, my friend.
I want to thank our guest, Michael Bowman, for coming onto the show today. If you want to learn more about Michael and the consulting services he offers, you can email him at bowmanlegacies@gmail.com. We'll also put a link to Michael's contact information on my website. To listen to future Environmental Transformation podcasts, you can visit my website at www.seankgrady.com and access all our episodes and sign up for our email posts. Also, if you want to support the podcast, when you are visiting my website, you can buy me a coffee by clicking the link on my website. Well, we really appreciate all our listeners who support the show. Remember, don't forget to hit the follow button and please write a review about this episode. And if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel. Thanks for listening, and until next time, make a positive impact in someone's life today.